As I promised last week, Glenn is passing out. Actually, I didn't promise Glenn would pass it out, but Glenn is passing out copies of the queries for ordination and installation for all of the officers of the church. And you will notice that query number 8 actually has multiple paragraphs in it. The first half of query number 8 is the same for all officers. And the second half of query number 8 is the part that changes depending upon which office, thank you, sir, which office you are being ordained for or installed for. So we're going to spend some time looking at the different part. Because if these are the things that you have to affirm to be invested in this office, and this is the difference between what the requirement is between this office and the office of, say, elder or teaching elder, then it should have some indication of what the difference is between the office of teaching elder and the office of deacon. So the section that I have here in italics is that section. To lead the congregation in the ministry of mercy, to practice the grace of scriptural stewardship, to cultivate it in the congregation, and to endeavor to handle the Lord's money in a manner which is efficient and above reproach. So let's look at these. To lead the congregation in the ministry of mercy. Okay. Now, I would like to point out that I think, I wasn't there for the discussion, but I think that Synod was deliberate in the order in which they put these queries together. That is, this is the primary responsibility of the diaconate. This is not the third or the fourth or the fifth thing down the list. And the reason that I point that out is because it is not the first thing that comes to mind when people think about the diaconate. First thing that comes to mind when people think about the diaconate is money, collecting the finances. But that is not the primary role of the diaconate. The primary role of the diaconate is to lead the congregation in the ministry of mercy. It is not to perform the congregation's ministry of mercy. The word that is used to lead is deliberate. The role of the deacon is not to be the congregation's minister. That is, minister of mercy. To lead in. There is an assumption there. That assumption is that the congregation will follow the lead of the deacon board. But the important thing is that if you are of the understanding that you cannot participate in the ministry of mercy of the congregation because you are not a deacon, you are wrong. You are called as a member of the congregation to perform the congregation's ministry of mercy. You are called as a deacon to lead such performances. Conductor, not player. Okay? So how do you do that? How how does a deacon lead the congregation in the ministry of mercy? Oops. This is the obvious one, right? By example. I hate it when I double click. By example. Right? Is that right? Are deacons supposed to perform the ministry of mercy? Yes. If the deacon board is doing all the ministry of mercy of the congregation, there's something wrong with the congregation. There's also something wrong with the deacon board. Okay. You can lead by example, but only if you're really leading. What do I mean by that? In management training, there is a type of management which is a leadership management. That is, you are a goal setter, you are a trend setter, you are a pace setter, where you go out and do the tasks and bring your people along with you so that they follow your example and do that. A goal setter who never delegates is a failure as a leader. Because, although he may be really, really effective at doing that task, his people never learn to do it. And so he can't move on. He can't get beyond. The group can't get beyond him doing all the work. The same thing is true of a deacon board. If a deacon board never delegates responsibility, the people in the congregation never learn to minister the way that they should. They are never led to minister. And although the tasks, the short-term tasks, may be done very well, the congregation is not being led in their ministry. They are being shown someone else's ministry. There's a very strong tendency for people to say, oh, that's the deacon board's job. No. All of our job. If you're involving the deacon board, it's because you want to be led in doing it, not because you want to be absolved of responsibility for it. So yes, it is possible and likely that the deacon board leads by example, but it's important, if you're going to be leading by example, that people are at a minimum cognizant of the example. What do I mean by that? Yes?
I spent 40 or 45 years as a carpenter. I'm basically a very lazy person. I found out it was much easier for me to do something myself than it was to teach somebody else how to do it. But they don't learn anything, and the job still gets done. I had to train myself to stop and teach instead of doing it myself.
Yep. If you don't stop and teach, teaching is hard. It's very hard. So you should feel sorry for me right now. If you don't stop and teach, you will always be responsible for all the work. And the amount of work that can be done will be limited, will always be limited by what you can do. It won't ever go any further. And it may be great quality work, but it will be limited in quantity. No question about it. Yes?
Would you accept the word mentor instead of teaching?
I would accept both of them as acceptable. I think that you absolutely can mentor a person as a form of leadership by example. I also accept the word coach, which is the one that I use in a few words. So, yes, absolutely. I think that teaching is also appropriate. Even classroom teaching. Have you ever sat through a classroom course on how to minister? One? Two? Wouldn't be bad for us all to sit through it. I'd be interested in that course. Okay? But my point, yes.
The problem is that you're right. But on the other hand, it's like teaching swimming by correspondence course. There's certain things you only can do if you've got the environment.
I understand it. I agree. Partially. It is very much like teaching swimming by corresponding course, but not entirely. It's more like teaching sailing by correspondence course. Because swimming is something that is almost entirely a physical only activity. But there is knowledge associated with sailing that you can learn by book. At some point in time, you are going to have to get in a boat or you are not going to be a sailor. So there's a limit to how much you can teach, but there is value in taking a correspondence course in sailing because you can learn things. You can learn about what do the buoys mean? Am I supposed to be on the left side or the right side of one that's red or blue or green? There are things that you can learn by correspondence, but practical is much more valuable. Yes?
I think it's interesting. I was listening to the Christian radio yesterday, and one of the guys was talking about, and he travels so much and he loves dining, and he's always talking about, how can I reach the waiter and the waitress? And so one of the things he suggested was, when the waiter comes, or the waitress comes to you and offers you drinks, say to them, hey, we will be blessing our meal. How can we pray for you when we bless our meal? And that opens an opportunity for them to share with you, you know, something that they can pray, or a line of questioning. And I thought that was a fantastic teaching opportunity. Now, for those of us that aren't necessarily the most outgoing, you might want to be with someone when they do that. And that, to me, would be more of a mentor, so that you're experiencing that with them. But the idea that some people can be taught and say, go and do, and they can't. And other people want to be led and more discipled in that, too. So I think that there's a fine difference between them, but there is a split.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, teaching is not by definition formal classroom or formal sanctuary. Teaching is one of many different methods that you can use to convey information and skills. So that covers the category. Now, back to the question that I asked. What does it mean that you cannot lead by example if people are not cognizant of the example? What am I talking about?
If I don't know what ministry of mercy the deacons are doing, it's impossible for me to share with them cognizant. But if I know what they're doing, then I can be, in a biblical sense, proud of the fact that we are doing ministry of mercy.
If the ministry of mercy of the congregation is done by the deacon board in the dark, quietly, subtly, without anyone being aware of it, which is the way that we as a culture tend to expect, can anyone be led by that example? Yeah, you're being represented. You're not being led. Is there a contradiction between our natural desire to keep benevolent needs quiet, personal, private, and teaching, leading people in the meeting of those needs? Yes.
I think you have to be careful on both sides of that, that it doesn't come out of pride. I mean, all through the, you hear about, even during the Depression, I'm not going to take charity, I'm going to cry, you know, but that's a matter of pride. You aren't going to take something that's going to help your children. I'm not speaking about anybody specifically, but you've heard it, and there's a whole generation in there who think it's wrong to do charity, because, but that's a matter of pride. Charity had gotten a bad connotation. So there's that. And I think there's also the people forget that we as a church are a family. And within your family, you can share things that you wouldn't share outside your family. If you go to a biological brother and say, hey, I need help with this, but don't tell anybody else in the family, I think you're forgetting that you should be able to trust your family. And I think we should view each other like that. And just by making something, I don't even say public, making something known to our fellow believers, at least a small group meeting of them, and where you need help, or you know, the deacons are doing this kind of thing, they could ask for more help from other people, doesn't mean that you are betraying or that you are revealing something about you that that's going to be printed in the newspaper. I think we need to trust each other to be supportive. And if we can't, then that's a whole different problem. And then on the flip side of it as well, we need to make sure that as deacons and as churches supporting the deacons, that the deacons are not making things, quote, public as a matter of pride. So that, look what we're doing.
In a certain sense, our reaction against making things public is because of the fear of pride, right? We don't want to be seen as saying, oh, look how good we are. Look at all these wonderful things we're doing. So we do it quietly, right? That's a good desire. In a certain sense, it's because of the nature. No one likes to be in need. No one likes to be in need. And therefore, there's this sense that being in need is shameful and should be concealed. Is that biblical? No. In, help me, Ephesians. Titus is collecting the tithe for collecting the offerings for the people in Jerusalem. 2 Corinthians, I'm sorry. I've read so many passages, it's hard to keep them. It's a joyous thing. Titus is thrilled. The people are delighted to be allowed to have the privilege to contribute to the needs of the church in Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is not ashamed of their need. Remember, these are the same people who, when the church was first formed, gave everything they had to each other for their mutual support. One of the reasons that there are people in Jerusalem who are in need is because Jerusalem funded the entire missionary evangelism. They gave up everything they had and contributed it to the spread of the gospel. And now they're in need. They're not proud of it. They're not ashamed of it. It's the reality of where the Lord has put them at this point in time. And the church as a whole, recognizing that need, ministers to them. They're joyfully ministering to them. They're not proud of their ministering to them. They're delighting in the opportunity that they've been given to serve the church. Yes?
Accepting charity until I realized I was accepting God's charity in my salvation. And I said, okay, what's my problem now? The other thing is that I guess the way I would, and I think I'm not the only person like this, I'd rather get charity in the form of a no interest loan than in the form of a gift. Because I want to pay it back. And I think that option should be offered to me.
Sure. Absolutely. There are methods of providing for people's needs that are gracious and yet give them the opportunity to participate in that ministry. If I'm in need, I would rather be provided the opportunity to work out my need than be given the solution to my need. Yes?
I have a question about this. In Matthew, Jesus talks about, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Forgive me, so you're giving it in secret. Is that more specifically to the individual as opposed to the giving of the church? I mean, should when the church gets together, like Titus was doing when he's collecting money for Jerusalem, was that
I would think that the do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing is referring to the individual. I really think that that's directed at the individual. That your giving, the amount of your giving, the nature of your giving is not a matter of pride. Your joy should be in the giving itself. You don't need to analyze your giving. You don't need to keep track of and count up your giving. You don't need to take pride in your giving. You need to give. And the nature of your giving is what? Joyful. Cheerful. Hilarious is the word. That's what you need to be focusing on your giving. Not counting it. Not counting the cost. Not counting to other people how much has been given. That's where I see the focus of that passage. The passage where they're collecting an offering for the believers in Jerusalem is a demonstration of publicly supporting a need in the church. The need is not private. The giving is not private. And they collect from Titus, but there's no record kept of what was the amount that they collected. They all gave as they were able to meet the need of the church. So it wasn't an accounting for, you know what, this church is required to give us $473 because that's your subscription to meet the needs of. It was cheerful giving, delight in being able to meet the needs of another congregation. Another person.
They didn't have an IRS.
Whole discussion in there. I would submit to you that the harder job of the deacon board in teaching is teaching people to come to the deacon board when they have need, rather than teaching people to contribute. I think that's a much harder job. From my experience on deacon boards, it is a frustrating thing. Number one, to be aware of people who are struggling and yet unable to or unwilling to accept benevolence, unwilling to accept the congregation ministering to them. People who have ministered to the congregation for years. People who have led the congregation in ministry. And yet, don't feel that their needs are worthy of ministry. Or are unwilling to accept that they're in a position where the need is there. That is a huge challenge for the deacon board. And I would submit to you that it is not a challenge the deacon board should take on alone. I think that if there is a person who the deacon board recognizes is in need and is unwilling to accept that, that's really something that should be brought to the session. Why? Because there's a spiritual problem there. Yes. Yeah.
It seems to me that there's a connection between small group ministry and this whole field. Because if people are not free to share their spiritual life, which is what we're seeking to do in our small group, they're probably not going to share the other either. But they may do it in a small group once they have developed a trust fund.
Very true. I think small group ministries are a fantastic tool for growth in trust, growth in relationships, getting people involved in each other's lives to the extent that they should be. I would argue that small group ministries shouldn't be necessary. What? It shouldn't be necessary because if we were sinless, we would all just be open completely with each other, one big happy family, and perfectly united. So in that sense, they shouldn't be necessary. We should be thoroughly and completely involved in each other's lives and open to each other. We should be free to express our needs, free to expose whatever troubles, struggles we have with each other. We should be open with our support of each other, open for giving, ministering. Small groups I see as an excellent tool to get the congregation closer to that as a goal. I think as a goal, open trust and familiarity within the congregation is really where we should be if we recognize that that's where the Lord should see his church. And I think small groups is a tool that you use in order to build those relationships and build that trust because it's just too hard to take on at that level. So, and not to say, by the way, that even were we as a whole congregation involved in each other's lives, that we wouldn't still break up in small groups and spend time with each other. Because that's one of the things that you do if you're really involved in each other's lives. So, yes. Yeah, yeah. What Barnabas did was done publicly. And Ananias and Sapphira sought the recognition that he got because of the faithfulness of his giving, and they sought that recognition without being faithful in their giving. And the interesting thing is, with Ananias and Sapphira, what does Peter say? It's not that you didn't give us everything. Didn't you own that field yourself? Were you under any obligation? Give us the whole amount? No. You tried to lie to God. You tried to lie to the Holy Spirit and tell us that what you gave us was everything. That's the sin. And that you're persisting in the sin in the face of being confronted with it is worthy of death. Die. Bring in the next. It did happen, I think, in a tent.
I said not in me.
It wasn't? Well, okay. It was the apostles. But the giving did not. The giving did not happen in the committee room. The giving did not happen. But Barnabas' reason for giving everything was not for his own pride. It was in the joy of being able to meet the needs of the church. And he received honor for that. It wasn't bad that he gave it openly. It wasn't bad that the congregation knew that he did it. And it wasn't bad that he received honor for it. Why? Because his reason for giving was not for the honor. His reason for giving was cheerful giving to the Lord. And that's worthy of honor. It's this strange thing that you have to deal with. It's okay to be honored for your giving to the church. As long as you're not giving to the church to get the honor. If you're giving a church to get the honor, then it's not okay to be honored for giving to the church. Which is how we end up in the situation that we're in now. Don't tell anybody what anybody gives, because then somebody might be. Right? Don't look in a mirror on Sunday, because you might see a gray hair and that might tempt you to pluck it out. And that would be work. And you're not allowed to work on Sunday, so therefore it's wrong to look in the mirror on Sunday. That's how we get to the situations that we're in, is in order to avoid sin, we hide the possibility of doing good. That's a problem. I think that's a problem. Yes? And many, many denominations do exactly that. Publish exactly how much they give. I don't have a problem with that. But I don't seek it either. You can't lead by example if people don't see your example. That's a struggle in our culture. But you can't lead by example if people don't see your example. And by the way, you can lead by both example of meeting needs and example of having needs. It's just as important for the deacon board to be examples of how to have need. Because guess what? That's one of the things that congregations really struggle with, is how to have need well. What do you mean? It's easy for me to need stuff. No, how to be in need. How to respond to being in need. There are times when God puts you in a position of need. Even as a member of a deacon board, you can be in a position of need. How you to respond to that, how you deal with that, should be a way that you lead by example in the congregation. And as a deacon, you should be willing to be an example for the congregation, because that's what your role is. Still want to be a deacon? By direction. No. It's tough. By direction. The deacons should direct. Wait a second, it's not a position of authority. What do we mean by that? It is important to have direction in ministry. And in ministry of mercy, it is really important to have direction. Random acts of kindness are nice, but they don't accomplish a whole lot. Much more is accomplished with a plan. Much more is accomplished with a goal. Much more is accomplished with a direction. And so, while movies like Pay It Forward glorify the concept of a random act of kindness, right? If I just do something nice to somebody and tell them, I did something nice for you, now you need to go do something nice for somebody else. The philosophy behind that movie is, if I do this three times, and I tell each person I do this to three times, is what their response should be, I will make the world a better place. That's the premise of the movie. That's the premise of the concept of paying it forward. Will that make the world a better place? In the absence of the gospel, no. No. If what you pay forward three times is the truth of salvation, yes. And you're called to do that. But good deeds, in the absence of the gospel, are meaningless, are worthless. Really? Do I believe that? Yeah, I do. I do. You cannot do any good apart from Christ. Yes. Well, if you're a saint, then you're doing it in the presence of the gospel. So encouraging another saint would not be in the absence of the gospel. So no, it would not include that. My point is that the world seeks a solution to the problem by being nice. Being nice is not a solution to the problem. Being nice doesn't get you anywhere. Being nice is not going to make the world a better place. That's why I made sure I restated the issue. It is good to do good things. It is good to do things in a congregation that are good. It is good to do random acts of kindness to each other. if that is the only ministry that the congregation has, the ministries of the congregation will not be successful. I believe that. Because I'm in favor of order, and I think that God is too. He talks about doing things decently and in order. He's speaking specifically about worship, but I think that it's a reflection of the nature of God that he approves of order. And I think there should be order to ministry. And I think that the deacon board is called to arrange that order. What's the practical how of that? Yes. Can there be so much order that it prevents mercy? Absolutely. No question about that. There can be so much order that it prevents mercy. How? Regulation. Ooh, regulation. How? Okay, to direct is not the same as to command. I agree, and we're pointing out the fact that there's this whole dichotomy between the diaconate is not a position of authority, and yet the diaconate is a position that is supposed to direct, the word that I used, the ministries of the church. How can you direct without authority? Yes.
I'll give an example. The deacons will organize an annual work day for the congregation. Nobody is told to be there, but it gives people an opportunity who want to help, a way to do it. You know, I wouldn't show up at Trick or Treat unless we didn't have a work day.
Yes. Yeah. By direction, I mean planning. By direction, I mean giving direction to. By direction, I mean telling people what to do. Providing opportunities to people. Can a person tell someone what to do without authority? Well, yeah. Right? My children tell me what to do all the time, and they don't have any authority over me whatsoever. They don't have any problem with that either. They don't see that as an issue at all. The deacons can come to the session if they say this really needs to happen, and the session can tell the people to do it. Because the session does have authority. But if you get to that point where the people are not willing to meet the needs of the congregation without direction in the form of authoritative direction, there's also a problem. And the session has other things that they need to deal with. Right? There isn't a contradiction between direction and not having authority. And the direction of the deacon board in the way of presenting opportunities should delight the congregation so much that they seize the opportunities. Should. Because we're called to it. Yes.
I thought I understood a principle in administration. That is, I have the authority to do what I've been ordered to do.
You have the authority to do what you've been ordered to do. That is, the concept that the authority is delegated secondarily, and therefore you can carry it out. And it's limited in scope to specifically what you've been tasked with.
I don't have the authority to do what I've been commanded to do. I can't do it.
Yeah, there, there are fine points of the discussion of authority that you can go over. All authority comes from God. Any authority that the session has is given to session by Christ, who is the King and head of the church. So the session doesn't really have any authority. And yet they've been given authority. I don't think we need to get stuck in this, because quite frankly, I think it works really well. Works really well. It's interesting that we make a theological problem out of something that is not a practical one. Isn't it? By example, by direction, the deacon board is responsible to give us a plan, to give us instruction, to give us direction in the ministries of mercy. By organization, by encouragement. That is how you lead a congregation in the ministry of mercy. And again, don't get stuck on the positive sides of all this. There's a negative side to this. What do you mean? Don't get stuck on providing the mercy. Also get stuck on the fact that needing the mercy is something that you need to be led in. Accepting the mercy is something that we struggle with because of our egos. Something that we struggle with because of our pride. And that's something else that we need to overcome. When you are in a position to need help, you should joyfully ask for that help. And you should be led by example and given direction for how it should be done. And there should be an organization in place for you to do it. And you should be encouraged when it happens. Both sides of the coin. Well, I almost got one slide done today. Like 3 more weeks or 4 more weeks? You going to give me the extra week? I think I've got 4 more weeks. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where the deacons perform their role. We need to understand that. 4. Okay. Good. Let's look to the Lord together in prayer. Father in heaven, we give you praise for the beauty of your creation. We give you praise for the opportunity that you provide for us to participate in the ministry of mercy. We thank you for the leadership that you have provided for us in those ministries. Father, pray that you would give us joy in our charity, give us joy in our giving. Let us be cheerful givers. And Lord, give us joy when you put us in a position of need. Help us, Lord, to delight in every situation that we find ourselves in, because we know, Lord, that this is coming from you. And Lord, we pray that you would be with each of us as we consider our situations and as we consider the opportunities that we're presented with, that we would be able to meet needs of others in the congregation and outside the congregation. And Lord, let us remember that we have the greatest gift that there is, that we have the greatest blessing that any man can receive, and that it is a gift that you have given us to share with others. And we pray, Lord, that we would share that joyfully, cheerfully, and hilariously as we are called to. We ask these things that your Son would be glorified through our words and through our deeds. Amen.